Welcome to Film School. I'm Jacob. God damn it.
You're not Jacob.
I'm Ben.
I'm sorry.
And we both love movies. I think we go with that intro, if I'm being completely honest. This is our third or fourth time recording the intro because Ben and I forgot how the podcast works.
The in-person dynamic was a lot better.
Yes. No, yeah. Going back to Discord after recording in person makes it feel completely different, yeah. I will say.
It's pretty nuts. But every single time we have to set up our audios, he always has to coach me on how to do it.
It's okay. The thing about audio equipment, especially if you want it to sound good, is it's needlessly complex, or like it seems needlessly complex.
Yeah, a lot
when
of
you
inputs.
Get down to it, it's technically neededly comp. How I don't know how to bit rates and sample rates and all that crap. Yeah. Anyway, yeah,
needlessly audio. Complex, you could say.
Needfully, I don't know, bro. Either way, it's complex. What how's it going, Ben?
The level of complexity is too damn high. It's doing quite it's going quite well. Thank you. How has your week been?
You know, it's been good. We were talking a bit earlier. I got to go home and see my family and help install some new flooring and stuff and watch some movies, which I will get into in the recommendations section. But no, my weekend's been good. I'm excited to talk about some stuff.
Once I get my own house, I want to do that thing where I make a floor out of new pennies.
Oh, is that a thing? I've never heard of
it. It looks wonderful. It was one of those viral Pinterest things.
Sure. That sounds like a TikTok thing almost too. Yeah, that's kind of cool.
Huh. Man, I just recently started getting into TikTok. TikTok's weird.
It's got some things. So there's a lot of things on TikTok.
I'm impressed with some of the quality of some of the stuff they put out. But anyway, we should probably start moving into our sections. Do you want to start with the news? What do you got?
Sure. Yeah, so A Quiet Place Part 2 came out this last week, or I guess by the time this comes out, maybe a week and a half or 2 weeks from now. Ooh. Not sure. Either way, you know what I'm trying to say. A Quiet Place Part 2 is out, and it actually had a $48 million opening weekend, which broke the previous pandemic opening weekend record, which was Godzilla versus Kong. So, yeah, the headline that I saw and the article that I read was pretty confidently like, theaters are back, baby. And I don't know whether that's like completely true, but it is still cool to see that like a lot more people were willing to go out and see this movie, and the reviews have been good. So that's exciting.
You know, I'm glad you brought this one up. It's interesting because I did see a headline similar to that too, where it's like A Quiet Place opens so-and-so. And I was just like, wow, I remember a bunch of people kind of, I mean, not cynically, because it's up to you to determine whether or not like this is a good or bad development. But a bunch of people were like, oh, the theater is going to be dead after, you know, the pandemic, it's all over. And then, you know, people, as things return to normal, people are proving that that's very much not the case. And I kind of like that because I genuinely the theater is like an experience. You know, I love going to movie with a big screen, and I'm glad that other people aren't just like, I can watch streaming. Like, they like going to the theater and seeing the big screen. And I'm glad that that is sticking around, even though, you know, a lot of people said it wouldn't.
Definitely. I think like, and especially, you know, I only went to two movies over the course of kind of what we would call the pandemic time period. I went to Tenet and I went to Godzilla versus Kong, which we actually went to together.
That was a fun time.
And it was a fun time. And those are both movies that I'm glad I saw in the theater, even though that where I saw Tenet, whoever was operating the projector and the sound system didn't do the best job. They had the aspect ratio wrong on the projector so that the movie didn't fill up the whole screen. And then the sound system was literally like, I know Chris Nolan movies are meant to be super loud, but it was literally turned up high enough that the bass was crackling on the speakers during the end credits. That's not how it's supposed to be.
The movie as it's made normally is hard to understand, and then the guy bungled the audio.
Yep, exactly. So that was pretty interesting. But either way, I'm glad. Yeah, no, seriously, like, theaters are an experience. There are several movies that I've seen that, like, I mean, and of course for our generation, a lot of the answer is going to be like the various Avengers movies are like big ones where it's like seeing those in the theater is like a huge experience, or even like the new Star Wars movies and stuff. Those are like event movies that are really cool to watch on a big giant screen with cool sound systems. But yeah, I think it's really cool. And I really like A Quiet Place Part 1, and I haven't seen A Quiet Place Part 2 yet. So I'm excited to probably see that here pretty soon.
I know we've already kind of talked about this when you came to visit, but what? So your big, like, oh, this is a great big screen movie was The Avengers.
Yes.
Mine was definitely The Force Awakens.
Yeah.
Like, I remember the first time I saw that, I was 15. It was the perfect age to see a new Star Wars movie. And boy, howdy, hey, even though I my relationship with The Force Awakens is kind of like the relationship to a lot of people have with their exes. where I, like, when it starts out, I was like, I just didn't even know it was happening. It was so much fun.
Uh-huh.
It was so thrilling and whatnot. And then I got on the internet and other people told me what to think about it. And I was like, oh, it's just a copy. I've been betrayed. And then I came back to being on good terms with it and loving it. Like, I don't care if it's a copy. Mm-hmm. It's a fun as hell movie that's well made and I don't care.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and I had a similar thing. I had a great theater experience with The Force Awakens as well. I saw it with a bunch of my extended family, like my parents, my brother, my grandparents, my aunts and uncles, like a whole bunch of us went to go see this movie, which was pretty cool. But for me, for my, you know, definitive theater experience being 2012 Avengers, you know, like the first Avengers movie, what stuck out in my mind and made that like my definitive experience was the... First of all, the wonder of seeing all of these super cool superheroes all on screen at the same time. And I had seen them individually in their own movies before, and now they're all together. What? It's crazy. And I was a comic book nerd. I am a comic book nerd. So I thought that was super cool. And then it was also a cool experience to go with my dad, because my dad and I had watched all the other movies with my dad, because my dad also was super into it. And then the other thing was the crowd participation. People cheered, clapped, people laughed, there was like interaction with what was happening on screen, which was crazy. Anyway, that was really cool. That was my first time experiencing that stuff. But yeah, theaters, they're cool. And I'm glad that they're still a thing right now.
Yes. Long live the theater.
Exactly. So what do you got for us, Ben? What's your news story?
So dovetailing similarly,
that's a laugh that I know is going to bring something good.
Well, dovetailing into our Force Awakens topic, I found some headlines about J.J. Abrams about how important it is to have a plan when you plan a movie trilogy. And I was like, you don't say, Mr. Mystery Box. Why don't you take your own advice every now and then?
Yep.
Yeah, I get it, though. Judging by like how people have reported behind the scenes, now that the drama is kind of over, quote unquote, you know, people are kind of have a better idea of what happened. Apparently it was fully like the plan was that J.J. Abrams was going to be in charge of like what the Star Wars trilogy was. And then due to some wrinkle in the plan, Rian Johnson, I mean, I think like what they had, I'm trying to remember, like J.J. Abrams, it's obvious from Rise of Skywalker, was actively trying to retcon and wrench back what Rian Johnson had done to it, you know, the Star Wars storyline up until that point. So I don't know if this is like a Kathleen Kennedy bungle, or if like they had J.J. Abrams do outlines and then Ryan just kind of went off the rails and that was his fault. I don't know. I don't want to be one of those saltier than crate fanboys who just, you know, whines about this and that and the other thing. But honestly, I found it funny that J.J. Abrams, who is commonly thought of as responsible for doing the whole, well, I mean, not responsible, but you know,
he gets some of the blame, especially from people like me who are Rian Johnson fanboys. He gets some of the blame for like what's wrong with the trilogy. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. It's just the main like criticism of the trilogy that even if you like them as flawed movies, as most of them are, I mean, you really love The Last Jedi, but you know, the main thing that everyone had a problem with is that it very clearly was
it
not
didn't know where it was
out.
Going. Yeah.
And it had no idea where it was going. It was like playing Mad Libs, but with millions of dollars.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember seeing this video on YouTube. I wonder if I can find it. It's called A Critique of the Sequels, from this guy who does really good video game documentary essays. And the top comment on it, let me find it. It like perfectly encapsulates, like it phrased perfectly the problem.
Which it's kind of interesting, you know, that I do think that most, even people like me who love The Last Jedi, the lack of planning is what most people see as, you know, the main flaw in the movies. Now, there's people like, you know, my own brother, who just hates the sequel trilogy in general and has a variety of you know, things that he doesn't like about it. Mostly, you know, the thesis there being George Lucas never intended this to be the sequel trilogy. So why would this be the sequel trilogy? But either way. Yeah. Anyway, what do you find that comment?
I did. It says the Star Wars original trilogy. When you have a vision, but barely the resources and leeway to bring it to life. The Star Wars prequel trilogy. When you have a vision, but too much leeway and resources to do what you want. The Star Wars sequel trilogy. When you have no vision, no plan, but unlimited resources and decide to play Mad Libs.
Yep. That really is
that
very
is
accurate.
Perfect. Honestly.
Yeah. Seriously. That I mean, and that's just Star Wars. There you go. That's Star Wars.
Yeah. I remember seeing one meme from like Tumblr in 2014 or so, where it was a screenshot of the Clone Wars.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the episode where, like, it was one of those weird filler ones where like R2-D2 and C-3PO do a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And it was this thing where like the little, remember that little guy who in The Phantom Menace like slammed into the wall and exploded really hard? They go to like that little dude's planet.
Okay.
And like his race is there, and C-3PO and R2-D2 are there to translate and help out. And the clones are there as well. And they're like, they're the ones doing the action, and the little aliens like squeak some language, and then C-3PO is like, he says, "Welcome to our disaster. Glad you could come." And the Tumblr ran with that. It was like, "Hey, that's Star Wars. Put it on the posters."
Yeah, pretty much. Exactly. Well, yeah, that, I mean, it's good to see that J.J. Abrams, if I remember correctly, that interview was kind of a reflection of him kind of looking back on his career thus far. And kind of also a little bit looking forward to what he looks like he's going to be producing and making in the future. But yeah, looking back, if I remember correctly, one of the quotes was something along the lines of just like, you know, looking back, we should have, if we had an end goal that we knew we were trying to hit, it would have made writing the first two movies a lot easier. And like there would be a lot more intentionality. And it's kind of like, yeah, that's how having an ending in mind works. You know, in a way, it almost makes me feel better about myself and my own storytelling abilities to learn that, like, even these like prestigious filmmakers who have made multi-million dollar movies and movies that are, in my opinion, really good. I would say like Star Trek 2009 is a really good movie. Mission Impossible 3 is a really good movie. Like, J.J. Abrams has made really good movies. But the fact that he himself has aspects of storytelling, such as figuring out an ending and planning things along the way, that he struggles with and is still developing, is kind of a confidence booster for me in a little bit, where it's kind of like, dang, even the greats, which, you know, it's probably a bit controversial to put J.J. Abrams as one of the great filmmakers, but even the successful filmmakers have things that they're still working on and trying to improve at.
Absolutely. The main, I had a similar feeling where I was reading Creativity Inc.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of my favorite books. It's a favorite for both of us.
Oh, yes,
I think.
Definitely.
And one of the bits is that Ed Catmull was talking about how in all the films that they make, when they start out, he phrased them all as they are all varying degrees of bad.
Yep.
And I'm like, wait, hold on. These are people who work at Pixar. They are top tier storytellers, and even their first drafts suck.
Oh yeah.
So
like literally
that
the
makes
most
me feel
prestigious
better.
Animation studio in the world. Like, yeah.
Right. They are the premier. Well, some people would argue that Studio Ghibli tops them storytelling-wise.
Legitimate argument. I don't know whether I think I wouldn't. I would rather not decide. I enjoy both of their films very much. But,
you know, honestly, Pixar has had like the strongest game. Like, Disney has been around longer, so they're just richer and bigger, and they own Pixar. But Pixar, like, if you line up all their movies, their worst one is... Okay, I wouldn't
Cars
say their
two.
Worst one is just mediocre. Yeah, their worst one actually is pretty bad. But like their second worst one is just okay. Like they don't have an abject failure of a film. They've never
what,
had
what
abject
would you consider
failure
their,
of a film.
Second worst one? Good Dinosaur?
Oh, probably.
Yeah.
I'm not a huge fan. Actually, strangely enough, really like kind of off topic little opinion I have here that I've wanted to get out, but that isn't long enough to turn to a video essay or something else.
Go for it.
I actually think that Inside Out is a little overrated.
How dare you?
Like when it came out, everyone was praising the bejesus out of it. Like, oh, this is beautiful and so-and-so this and that.
Sure.
I will say this. I think Inside Out storytelling is good. It is a upper mid-tier Pixar movie.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the way it perfectly translates mental health issues and how it talks about you know, the way people's minds work, especially young people, their minds, the way that it translates how to talk about that in a physical sense, with the characters and what's happening, is very, very skillful and very, very on point. I'm like, wow. So the whole, you get a bunch of emotions before you just can't feel anything. And that's how depression feels. That's really on point. That's how it works. Yeah. That's amazing. Definitely. So I sometimes use, and one thing I loved, I will praise Inside Out for this. I loved how like a lesser studio, like Illumination, will be like, let's have an emotion movie and anger and fear are the bad guys. Yeah. But like in the first like 10 minutes of Inside Out, it's established that all the emotions, despite having very different characteristics, their main goal is to keep Riley emotionally healthy.
Yep.
Even anger and fear. Like, I loved how, you know, they didn't paint, fear as a villain. Instead, like, his job is to keep Riley physically safe. And I'm like, wow, that's the first time I've seen a negative emotion portrayed as like, yeah, it's there for a reason. It helps you. It helps. It keeps you from getting hurt. And I'm like, wow, that's really mature for a kid's movie. That's amazing.
Definitely. Yeah. Inside Out on a lot of levels, besides just the storytelling, is there's a lot of care put into that movie, which I think is like a big aspect of it. Like, you can tell the storytellers, the animators, the writers, everybody like really cared about what they were making, which I think is what you can say about most Pixar movies. Like, I don't even know if I could pick out a single Pixar movie or even a lot of like Disney animated movies where like, even if I don't like the movie very much, Frozen 2 is a great example of this. I don't like Frozen 2 very much, but watching that like Disney Plus documentary they did about the behind the scenes and stuff, the crew cared a crap ton about that movie. Like, you can tell there was a ton of love put into making Frozen 2. I think it's a poorly written movie and it's too confusing and tonally inconsistent, but it's super cool that like the crew and everybody had a great time and put a lot of like blood, sweat and tears and heart and soul into that movie. Anyway. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Movies.
I actually read something. Or what was it? I think it was Shafferless Productions. He's the big YouTuber.
Yeah.
His video, and he talked about how, you know, why Frozen 2's production was so weird. And I'm kind of surprised that the Frozen 2 documentary was even allowed to be made. Because, I mean, it didn't show like in visceral detail, like the sweatshop for Emperor's New Groove.
Sure.
But it showed like, it pretty honestly illustrated like, yeah, this was a pretty tough, hellish production to get through. And I'm like, you know, usually Disney has kind of this whole like, oh, let's go behind the scenes and see how much fun everyone has. And so genuinely like expressing, this movie's production was pretty troubled. And like Disney itself publishes a piece of media that admits as much as like, wow, that's off brand. That's weird. Yeah. Why did they let that be made? It was kind of strange.
It is interesting. I never really thought about that too hardly, because the documentary felt honest enough that I wasn't really questioning why it was being so honest. That's really interesting. Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, because I remember the sweatshop was like made, you know, covertly and had to be talked about in secret by, you know, Disney animators. Like, we can't let Disney know we're making this. Like, no, this we could be sued for defamation if this went public. You
for
know,
sure, for sure.
Which I'm glad I watched it though. It was, that movie's production is so weird. And
I haven't seen that documentary. It sounds interesting though. That
it's on
really
YouTube
cool.
now. Oh, okay. It was originally one of those like famed lost media things, and then it resurfaced on YouTube, and surprisingly it's still up. When I first saw it was like two weeks on the site, and I was like, ooh, I better grab that before Disney strikes that. They're not gonna want that up. And it's still there, and I'm like, that's weird. Why is it still there?
Maybe it's the new, like, you know, Disney's exchanged management a couple times since then. So it could be that, you know, the new management just like, that's not us now. So we don't really care.
Yeah. Maybe Iger was a bit aggressive and whoever's here there now is not.
Yeah. Either way. I think that's a good little pivot point to our main topic of the week, which was, I assigned Ben and myself, because I hadn't seen it yet, I was just excited for it, to watch Zack Snyder's Army of the Dead, which came out about 2 weeks ago in theaters and about a week ago on Netflix. Which,
oh, it did premiere in theaters. I didn't know that.
It did. It was in select theaters about a week before the movie came out. And interesting thing, before we dive into the plot of the movie and what happened and what we thought of it, I noticed that when it came to reviews of this movie, people who reviewed this movie and said they saw it in theaters tend to like this movie a lot more than people who reviewed this movie who said they saw it on Netflix, which was super interesting. Anyway, It's a movie. It's a heist movie, but it's a zombie movie. That's kind of the the gist of it. If you haven't seen it, we're probably going to go into spoilers. It's on Netflix, you know, which if you have Netflix or want to do a free trial of it, you can watch it. I don't know whether either of us are going to recommend that you need to watch it, because I my thoughts are pretty mixed on it. What did you think of it, Ben?
My main like thing that I took away from it is the first 15 minutes are the highlight.
Oh, for sure.
So when I first started watching, I was like, okay, so here's the cool logo, and then here's two people getting married, and then there was that scene, and then they crash, and then the zombie gets out, and when the zombie overlooked like the glittering landscape of Las Vegas, and the song starts, and the montage of like the old 50s crooning Viva Las Vegas kind of thing happened, is like all the stuff was blowing up. I was like, this is awesome. And then the kapow or something explodes in the background. All the zombies are going everywhere. And I'm like, this is colorful. This is fun. And then I saw Dave Bautista doing things, and I was like, oh no, this is going to be San Andreas again, isn't it? And boy, was it.
That's hilarious that that was your first thought when you saw Dave Bautista.
Yeah, I mean, you get the big action man who has the estranged daughter, and he'd be like, why don't you talk to me anymore? Also, I'm putting together a team, something, something disaster, lots of people dying, but we all made it out. Okay, actually, this movie Rogue One'd it. That was kind of funny.
Yeah, they did, which it was a super interesting decision.
Yeah, honestly, I was not pleasantly surprised. I will say, as unfortunate as it is to report, I was kind of bored about like 9/10 through this movie.
I know what you're saying. Yep.
It was when, like, you know, they were going up into that Olympus hotel and they were shooting some zombies and he was trying to get his daughter back.
Yep.
And I just like looked down at my food and just ate. And then I looked up 2 minutes later and I was like, yep, they're out. I didn't feel the need to pay attention to that bit very much. I will say, you know, I should save some of these for Ben's bright side, but I will say some of the ideas in the movie are really quite creative. Like none of the characters really stick out to me super well. One problem I had that it was repeated was where they got people to do things way too easily. Like there was that one, you know, badass blonde chick was like, oh, she's the coyote. She can do this and that. And then like the first time we hear her speak or interact with anyone besides like just brooding on the sidelines, they're like, we need you to do a thing, and then she's like, sure, and I'm like, oh really, that's
that,
it, okay,
that quick. Yep.
Yeah, and then like when they went to go, you know, reassemble their team, like I know they knew each other, and the the woman who spoke Spanish, I can't even remember their names.
I know
Dave Bautista and Dave Bautista, you know, we're meeting up, like, okay, they have a history together and that's cute.
Yeah,
and they like, and she clearly kind of likes him a bit, but like they just went to go find the other guys, they're like, yeah, you want to do a thing? Yeah. I really loved the one place where that worked well, in my opinion, was like the sassy pilot lady.
Yes.
Her first line that I hear is, they should have nuked Las Vegas in the 90s.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, I already like this woman.
Yeah.
And when she's like, yeah, I'm in, when she hears the $2 million.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, okay, that's on point for that character. That's fine. But every other character, it would have been nice to see them push or, you know, haggle a little bit and be like, oh no, I don't want to do this with so-and-so. I wonder if that would make it feel a little too slow, though, because for strangely enough, for a like a zombie apocalypse heist movie, this movie felt really weirdly sedated. Like it felt slow.
Yeah,
paced.
I was like, definitely.
And I was like, why does this feel boring? You're in a zombie city and you got like action boots and stuff. Why am I bored? This should not be happening. So I don't know if I could really pinpoint, like, you know, oh, this is why. Actually, one thing I have noticed that like movies and media that feel really slow and overly sedated to me is like when characters don't interrupt or talk over each other. And I know that's a weird thing to say, but like the same thing is happening with the Bad Batch where I'm watching right now. I'm kind of forcing myself to watch it because it's Star Wars, but I don't really enjoy it all that much. It's just fine. It's not what I expected. But like, you know, a clone will talk, and then like a second will pass, and then another clone will talk, and then a second will pass. And like, I like hearing characters like organically interact where they're like, you know, one's talking and the other one kind of interrupts a little bit,
sure,
and then one finishes the other sentence. Like that sounds more natural and makes the story feel quicker. But when it feels overly voice acted and staged like that, where a character says a thing, pause, yes, I think that too. Pause. It makes the movie feel slower and weird, and it makes the characters not seem like they interact very naturally. And I think this movie might suffer a little bit from that kind of syndrome. Like, if they just snapped up the dialogue a little bit. I don't know. I can't point to like a specific, like, here's why this movie feels weirdly boring despite being a zombie heist movie, which is cool. You know, so I don't know. But I will say that the first like 10 to 15 minutes was like, oh, that was a cool montage. Great use. Also, I really chuckled and also kind of cringed at a visual dad joke in that first bit.
What was that?
So, the bit where the guy, the government agent coming down on his like parachute thing, right?
Oh, yes.
Is going down into the crowd.
Yes.
And then the lyric in the song is shoot as the chute like falls. Yep. And I'm like, hat, I saw what you were doing there, Zach.
It's pretty fun.
Great job, Mr. Snyder. But I did love the visual, not gag, because it's not funny, but like, you know, where the parachute comes down, then you just see like blood splashing up from underneath it. I'm like, wow, that's really visually interesting. So that whole sequence was very well planned and very engaging. But after that, I was just like, oh, wait, this is San Andreas, but instead of earthquake, it's zombies. And
it's
instead
zombies,
of Los Angeles, it's Las Vegas. Though I will say that the post-apocalyptic kind of vibe of the place inside was pretty cool. It was kind of neat to see all those flashy casino, you know, machines being all rusted over and crusted with blood and whatever else. That was pretty cool. Though I will say the fetus scene was disgusting, and I never want to see that again.
That's not an unpopular opinion.
Well, overall, liked the first like 10 to 15 minutes. Rest of it was what are your thoughts? Did you kind of agree?
Yeah, pretty much agree. Now I'll actually touch on a couple things that you said just before I go into my opinion. Something interesting about you liked the helicopter pilot, which I really did too. And I liked that character even more when I learned that that character was CGI'd in post.
What?
So that character was originally shot with a completely different actor, Chris D'Elia, and it was a different character. Like, still the helicopter pilot, still kind of a sassy character, but different name, different like everything. And Chris D'Elia then was accused of sexual assault by five women before post wrapped up.
Oh goodness!
Up. And Zack Snyder was like, "Sorry, man, we're not putting you in the movie anymore." And,
wow, that's actually okay. A real pause, real quick. That's a bummer that had to happen, but props to Zack for being integritous and doing the right thing.
Yeah. So then they cast Tig Notaro, who is the lady who played the helicopter pilot in the final cut, and they shot all of her stuff on green screen. And put her over top of Chris D'Elia's stuff.
Wow.
So yeah, I didn't notice.
me either.
So
that's nuts.
Yeah, there were a couple shots in the helicopter scene at the very end that I thought looked kind of awkward because I couldn't tell, like, they purposely had her in shadow kind of, and the angle was strange to kind of be like, I think they were trying to cover up some flaws in the compositing and stuff. And so there were a couple shots with her near the end of the movie where I was like, that feels strange. That's a weird shot. Like, that was just kind of my only thing. But yeah, so that was super interesting. But yes, overall, I pretty much agree on your take on it, where it was disappointing. Like, I was hoping for more, and it wasn't more. It was kind of your standard zombie movie stuff, but done again in 2021, which is a little bit sad. Like, I would hope that at this point in 2021, when you're making a zombie movie that has as cool of a pitch as heist zombie movie in abandoned Las Vegas, that would be, I was hoping that movie would be cooler, and this movie is fine. Yeah. Like, there's some good things in it. I think, like you said, the first 15 minutes is great. I think that there are some action scenes that work really well. Like the scene where they're walking through and kind of following the glow sticks in the sleeping zombies. I think that scene is done really, really well. And the tension builds really well in that scene, as far as like when the zombies slowly start waking up and that lady has to keep cutting their throats to keep them from from waking the other ones up. And then it just keeps getting worse and worse and worse. But yeah, it's just kind of, in a lot of ways, standard zombie movie stuff. And there's a lot of weird things in this movie that are established, sort of like Chekhov's gun, and then never pay off. which what's is a good, strange what's one of those? Thing. Like, for example, the giant buzzsaw that one of the characters carries around. He uses right. it in the first 10 minutes of the movie, carries it around for the rest of the movie and never uses it. What?
Well,
why?
That lady does use it to cut down a wall that one time, remember?
Yes, that's true. But it's that that specific character who, like, half of his characterization, besides the fact that he's a psychiatrist or whatever, is that he uses that giant saw and he never uses it. And then that's the other thing. Near the beginning of the movie, he's like, yeah, man, I think about the faces of those zombies that I killed every day because they used to be people. And then, like, 10 minutes later, less than 10 minutes later, he's like, I think it could be therapeutic for me to go back there and kill more zombies. And then it never is a conflict ever again the rest of the movie. Huh. Like, it's just like, what?
That okay. is kind of funny. You know, actually, you talking about it kind of gives me a clue as to, like, another problem that I think might make this movie feel a little more boring mm-hmm. is that the zombies never actually, like, they're established as a really frightening threat uh-huh. in those first effective 15 minutes. And they never really feel like these, you know, what would make me feel like these zombies are really dangerous and something to be feared is like if these really badass, you know, buff, you know, military trained people acted consistently afraid of these things.
Uh-huh.
Right. But like when the zombies attack or when they find some of them, they're just kind of act exasperated or somewhat like, oh,
yeah,
you know, like
yeah.
their faces are more just kind of vaguely angry and not, oh God, oh no, they're coming. Oh God.
Sure,
oh no. Like I want the zombies to feel more like xenomorphs and less like, mm-hmm. I don't know, just like thugs. And like when they catch you, like they just kind of wrestle you for like 4 minutes and then they bite you and they're just kind of like, ow, and then they kill themselves.
Yeah.
And
yep.
so I'm like, I don't feel threatened by these zombies at all. So I think like the idea of fast zombies was like not pioneered, but it was like really cemented. It's like, oh, okay. So they aren't just slow and stupid. They mm-hmm. can like run with Zombieland, and the Zombieland zombies are genuinely scary. Like, you know, in that movie, you know, you're terrified of those things.
Sure.
And you know, but in this movie, it's just like, uh-oh, some zombies, they're sleeping, time to sneak by them. Uh-oh,
yeah,
one woke up, time to stab that man. Now he's dead. It's like, wow, they don't act terrified by these at all. They just kind of wrestle you and then bite you.
Yeah.
And then you turn into one of the, like, I didn't feel threatened by the zombies. And one thing that is interesting is, you remember how you said that when you looked at the poster for Sorcerer's Apprentice and it gave you like really weirdly mixed signals and made you uh-huh. like, huh, that's bad.
This movie's marketing is the same thing. I totally get what you're saying. Yeah. Yeah.
I looked up the Viva Las Vegas song afterwards because I really liked it. Uh-huh. And like the poster for this movie, which is, you know, the thumbnail for the music video,
yeah.
has like a lot of neon lights. It has yep. like these, you know, diamond eyes and this skull. And I'm like, oh, this is Zack Snyder going to go nuts. Like if I had seen that poster but not the movie yet, I would have uh-huh. been like, oh, this is Zack Snyder like flexing his James Gunn style muscles where he'd like use all of his weird stylistic things on 300 and
yes.
go nuts with a zombie movie. Like, I honestly would have expected out of this movie for like there to be a shot where the guy like rides his saw like a skateboard
yeah,
as it's
exactly.
going.
Yeah,
as
something
as he,
crazy
like
that.
Twirls
yeah.
his guns or something. Like, I was really hoping there to be something nuts. And mm-hmm. it's just like, oh, gotta get the money. Oh, let's beat up the German guy who is a nerd. Uh-oh, a zombie. Time to shoot it in the head. And aside from the end bit, like, they only run into a few at a time. And so I'm like, wow, this movie is really, this should not be boring. This should be insane and fun and ridiculous. And what's the bummer is that I know Zack Snyder can do fun, ridiculous, uh-huh. and over the
yeah.
top. I've watched him do it with 300, with parts of Justice League.
Yeah. yeah.
And he just decided to make this sedated, weirdly
fairly straightforward. Like, yeah.
Like, what is he doing? So I don't know. I feel like maybe he just didn't go insane enough, though. Okay. I think we should move into Ben's bright side because I have this one thing I'm itching to say.
And I have one little detail to go into, to like just a little tidbit about the movie to get out. And then I think we can go into the categories. That sounds good.
Yeah.
The other
sure,
tidbit is that you mentioned the German guy. That was one of the characters that I did really enjoy, and his relationship with the psychiatrist guy. I thought that their like little duo during parts of the movie was one of the more fun, like kind of things that I enjoyed about it. But anyway, that guy, yeah. I don't remember his name. I need to look up on IMDb what his name is, but he is directing a prequel to this movie that's coming out next year. Yeah, about his character.
Oh, okay.
Which is really interesting. Let me see. Matthias Schweifer. That
so
guy.
So he's just going to make a movie about a safecracker that will take place in the same universe as a zombie apocalypse eventually.
Yes. Exactly.
That's
so,
kind of funny.
Yeah. Apparently it's supposed to be like more of a comedic movie. Like it's meant to be like more just kind of lighthearted. But anyway, that's a thing that's happening. But yeah, we can go into Ben's bright side now if you want to. But yeah, go ahead.
Before we do that, real quick, I will say that when I first like got into like the first 20 minutes of this movie and like the blonde guy that was the safecracker was like doing awkward stuff, I'm like, is he just going to be the character everyone craps on the whole time because he like did an awkward thing and everyone's like, what's he doing here? And I'm like, can you just let him exist as a person on the team, please? This is going to get old fast. And I'm glad they did not run that into the ground and that the psychiatrist guy eventually did respect him. So I'm like, okay, they dropped that quickly. That would have gotten really annoying.
They didn't overdo that, but it was kind of funny a little bit, like that he was supposed to be the nerd character and he's also supposed to be like the young guy, but also apparently that like Matthias, whatever I'd said his name was, is like in his 40s. He just looks young. And the other thing was he's also ripped. Like the fact that it's like, I'm wimpy and I can't kill zombies. That dude is way, way built better than me. Like anyway. Yeah.
Honestly. Yeah. Same with me here. I still need to get rid of my quarantine weight. I'm getting rid of
it. Same man. Same.
So yes, Ben's bright side. So I have a couple points to hear.
Okay.
One, like I said, some of the ideas he explores with this, it is kind of disappointing that he didn't do much new or interesting with a lot of his zombie concepts like other movies did. And in 2021, I was kind of like, you could have done more interesting things.
Yeah.
But I loved the idea of the zombie animals. Like, oh, yeah, it's Vegas. They have like elephants at their circuses. They have tigers at their shows. That, of course, makes sense. Like, you know, why would you set this in Las Vegas? Like, that's one of those questions I was asking myself. Like, okay, if you're a good creator, director, writer or something, you should be able to defend most of the decisions you make. Because in case someone is like, hey, why'd you do this? Or this is going to be too hard. You should have intention behind why you do the things the way you do.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, so this is interesting that it's a zombie heist movie. Why in Las Vegas? And to me, a really good answer is like, this would be cool is, well, Vegas has a lot of really crazy stuff in it. Maybe the neon lights could make the, you know, the zombies walking around look interesting, which I wish he had done more shots like that.
Yeah.
But also, I think he really did take advantage of like, oh yeah, there are tigers here. There are animal shows here. They would get bitten. There would be zombie animals. So watching that like king zombie walk around with the half-skinned horse and the really satisfying death where the tiger thrashes around that one guy. I'm like, okay, that's cool. Seeing the skull underneath that tiger and having it be like a thing they watch out for and treat like more of a threat than the human zombies, to be honest.
Definitely.
Really cool. So I love that. And also, even though I wasn't super impressed with this movie overall, I was kind of like, oh, mad props, actually, where they actually had the balls to like actually kill all the characters, or almost all of them, except for the daughter. And I was like, oh, I was expecting at least Dave Bautista to get out of this.
Sure.
But by the end, when she has to shoot her own dad in the head, I'm like, oh, that's so sad.
Yeah.
That's a bummer. And then he gives her the stack of cash and I'm like, okay, that isn't the favor you think it is, Bautista. 80% of that is going to her therapist.
That's so true.
Honestly, though, like she was crying in the desert and I'm like, buddy, you aren't going to a food truck. You are going to a shrink, girl.
That's hilarious. That's great.
Yeah, it was a bummer. I felt bad for her.
For sure. Yeah, that I thought the ending was interesting, too. It was a little bit, I don't know if I would call it depressing for me. Like, it was just kind of like, oh, this is the direction we're going. I didn't expect it. I think that ending, similar to Rogue One, that ending would have been better for me if I cared about the characters more. This wasn't like Rogue One where I didn't care about the characters because they were not very likable to me. These characters were mostly likable. It just seemed like everything I knew about them was very surface level, which is, you know, I don't remember any of the characters' names. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, I
me
don't.
Either. Yeah.
So at least with Rogue One, even though I didn't think the characters were very fun to hang out with, I remember their names. So, you know, but either way, I thought like it was, I don't want to say this movie's a bad movie because I don't think it's a bad movie. It just was, I'm not going to watch it again anytime soon. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like, it's fine.
But, yeah, I think this is one of those, a classic example of like, this movie did not live up to its own premise.
Yeah, agreed. I would totally agree with that. Well,
yeah, I
go ahead.
Admire and respect their courage to Rogue One it, though the very, very ending made me roll my eyes where like the zombie song, like where the actual song is called Zombie.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
the guy is like going somewhere. I'm like, I just rolled my eyes and I was like, very subtle, Snyder. Good job. And then I hate calling him just the black guy, the psychiatrist.
Yep.
Gets onto the plane and then the attendants are like, oh, you're good. And then he's bit. And then it says, you know, going to drop off in San Diego City or whatever, mm-hmm. or Utah City. And
no,
he's
it was
like,
Mexico City, I thought.
Mexico. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, what now? And then it ends and I'm like, is that suggesting that it's going to happen again? But in Mexico City, is he turning? Because like, that's the other weird thing is like the world building of this movie is weird.
Uh-huh.
Where like, you know, it's revealed that when you get bit, it's not a huge ton of time. But, you know, in between when you're bit and when you, you know, turn into a zombie, and Dave Bautista just had his shoulder nibbled on a bit. And uh-huh. even though it hurts, he turned into one. But the psychiatrist dude had a big bite out of his arm and he was fine.
And he
waited hours
yeah,
after.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, so this movie is weird. I don't understand what's happening.
Yeah.
So the very, very ending, I think I would have just like. I would, if I were Snyder, I would have like made the bit where the psychiatrist gets on the plane as a deleted scene and just been like, yeah, it's just her in the desert. And then I've,
or even just a post credit scene, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, something.
Yeah.
So yeah, I thought that the very, very ending was kind of dumb and was like, okay, so are you leaving it open for a sequel, buddy? Are you,
sure.
What are you doing?
Yeah.
So I think it should have just ended with her in the desert and making a mental note to get her issues sorted out.
Sure. Well, if we want to move on to that thing that I noticed, my specific thing for this that I really appreciated. So it's kind of interesting. I don't know if you saw this. Zack Snyder was not only the director and co-writer for this movie and producer. He was also the director of photography.
I did see that.
So I thought that was super interesting. And you could definitely tell because he shot most of this movie wide open at T15, like super, super shallow depth of field. Did you notice that in a lot of the shots?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually, that was something I did notice where, weirdly enough, me and my silly YouTube brain, I was like, this looks like a Brandon Rogers video because Brandon Rogers will do that. Well, he'll have like, he'll put this kind of post-production, like kind of, I don't want to say Instagram filter, but you know, that shallow depth of field and the tilt shift almost where it's like, wow, the edges of the screen are kind of blurry and weirdly stylized. And I didn't dislike it. I thought it was interesting, but I did notice that. And I was like, the whole movie's like that. That's kind of cool. So yeah, go off on what you think, like, you know, what you think about that. Yeah. Uh-huh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's cool. I did like the stylistic, you know. So actually I do have an editing question. So the way that this movie is made like that, did they like export the whole movie file as like a big thing and then throw that effect on it in post? Or do they have to like drag that little tilt shift effect onto like each clip of the movie, like individually. I don't really know how professional movie editing works.
Well, the kind of tilt, they probably enhanced some of the effect of that in post, but a lot of what you're seeing is the lens.
Okay.
It's the lens, the aperture being open as wide as possible on lenses that can get a really shallow depth of field, which is usually T1.5. He may have shot it at shallower than that, I'm not sure. But the effect that I saw looked very similar. I have a few cinema lenses, and when I open them up to T1.5, that look is very similar to what I can get with those. But nice. As far as the actual other, like kind of like what you described as like a tilt shift, that was probably applied in the color grading process, which is usually done on a clip-by-clip basis when it comes to correction, but when it comes to the overall stylizing and grading, it's a bit more of a general, this is the look we want the entire film to have, so we can kind of apply it overall the whole thing, but it still is minutely adjusted for every shot. But a lot of, I think more of that effect than what you think is affected by the actual lens itself.
Gotcha. You know, thank you for letting me know. I appreciate
that. Yeah, no problem.
One thing I will say is last little nitpick about this movie.
Yeah.
Is that to me, the effects aren't incredible. Like, I think that the zombies clearly aren't CG, or if they are CG, that's where most of the budget went.
they were mostly live action, like prosthetics and makeup and stuff.
That's good, because I think it's obvious. And I think that I really did like how the zombies looked. Like, they didn't look like boring or anything. I was like, okay, sure, that's a cool zombie, you know. But some of the effects, like, I swear, like when the woman dropped the queen's head, and then it exploded on the steps, I'm like, that looks like a Blender particle simulation.
Yeah.
Same with the explosions. Like the desolate, broken, you know, Las Vegas looks really good. Mm-hmm. It looks like a real ruined Las Vegas.
Sure.
But then, like, when things exploded, I was like, that literally looks like off a student Blender progression reel. That explosion does not look like the smoke simulations on the ground, and I'm like,
sure,
yikes, did you just pull up Houdini there, sir? You know?
Yeah, I felt I didn't notice it quite as much. I noticed it a little bit at the beginning, but I sort of have a switch I can turn on in my brain where it's like, this is a Netflix movie, and all the effects start blending into the movie, because it's like, it's a Netflix movie. A lot of Netflix movies have that about that same level of VFX, and so it kind of just like got in my head that it was like, yeah, that's what I'm watching. I'm watching a Netflix movie, but I totally get what you're saying.
Kind of like the nuclear explosion looked so wimpy.
Yeah, yeah.
It explodes, and I'm like, that's what the nuclear explosion looks like. That's what we were worried about. Jeez, sure. I mean, that one guy survived by putting himself in a fridge.
Yeah, yeah, literally. Which that's and I think that goes back to what you were talking about earlier, and I totally agree. For a Zack Snyder movie, a lot of this feels very toned down, and it's kind of strange.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, for all the movies he should not have done that with.
Exactly, exactly.
It's Vegas. It's zombies. Where's your neon lights, sir? Yeah,
it's interesting. It's strange, but either way, Ben, would you remake this as an animated movie? I'd be intrigued. Nope. Okay.
I don't have anything else to say. Just nope.
I mean, I won't argue with you. I don't know. I don't think it merits an animated thing. I don't. Yeah. It's
yeah. I can't see any reason why. What I would feel sorry for any animator that have to do this, because, like I said, it's like weirdly paced and kind of sedated.
So sure.
Like, I actually remember thinking about this when I was watching. I was like, okay, now let's think, Ben. Would you remake this as animation? And I just kept like watching, trying to find any moments where I'm like, yeah, that needs to be animated. And I remember seeing like this one scene where like Dave Bautista struggles with like something in front of him to like trying to push it for like 20 seconds straight. And I'm like, man, I would feel really bad for whatever animator is just like, yeah, see this muscly guy? You have to animate 20 seconds of him just going like to some like cabinet. And I'd be like, what am I doing? I'm animating a movie about zombies in Vegas. Where's the neon lights?
Yep.
Where's the cool zombie creature designs? We have two animals in this. So, like, I guess if I were making this as an animation, I'd be like, can we just VFX this? Why are we animating this? So
sure.
I can't see any reason why it should be.
Good
I would
reasoning.
Feel bad for anyone who
Good
had to
reasoning.
Animate this.
Yeah, for sure. Well, the way Nolan intended, also known as, in this case, Zack Snyder's original vision.
Yes.
which is interesting in this case because it went straight to streaming, even though it did go to theaters a little bit.
Yeah. So this is more your arena. Do you think, so you said that most reviewers who watched this in theaters liked it better.
Yes.
Do you think that this movie would be enhanced or would be more fun on a big screen? What are you thinking?
My guess is yes. Now, I watched this movie on like a, I don't know, like a 50-inch flat screen TV, like nothing crazy with a sound bar. You know what I mean? Like, and I found myself, like you said, you got bored about 9/10 of the way through or 7/8 of the way through. I found myself consistently not as engaged as I would have liked to be for most of the movie. Now, not bored, but just not as engaged as I would have liked to have been. And I think
same for me here. It was just when 9/10 of the movie happened, I was like, okay, now I'm really like,
sure,
come on, hurry
sure
up. You know?
I totally get that. That's pretty, yeah, that's kind of how I felt too. But yeah, I mean, from what it sounds like, most of the reviewer, like, so for example, I watched Chris Stuckman's review for this movie and he was very positive, and he did specify at the very beginning, I saw it in the theaters and it was just a fun theater experience where I got to kind of turn my brain off and see a fun thing. And I was like, okay, that right makes sense. Same thing with, I listened to Mostly Nitpicking with Nando DJ and Diggins, which is a movie review podcast. And I think it was
like
specifically
Nando V Movies.
Yes. It's him and his two other friends doing a movie review podcast. And I would recommend it if you enjoy listening to the kinds of things that we are currently making.
I will have to
right
write
now
that down.
but I think it was specifically Diggins or maybe it was DJ. One of them saw it in the theaters and they were the only one who really liked the movie. Like both Nando and I think it was DJ. Nando and DJ didn't like it, but Diggins saw it in the theaters and was like, it was fun. I don't know. Like, I enjoyed it. So, you know, it sounds like it is one of those Snyder's original vision type things where it's like watching it in the theater probably does enhance your experience. I didn't do it, so I wouldn't necessarily know, but I can see a few of these scenes and a few of these set pieces and even just the movie in general being a bit more fun and a bit more engaging on a giant screen where you can kind of just sit back, you know?
Mm-hmm. So you would put this on a big screen and really
I probably would. Either way, it wouldn't be. That's the thing about this movie, especially with one of the movies I'm going to recommend. I would much rather recommend that movie to watch in a theater. Like, either way.
Yeah.
So which is a good segue to unless you have more to talk about this movie, I think we might as well go into recommendations next.
Yeah, no, not much else to touch on there. A bit disappointing, terrible.
Yeah.
watch the first 15 minutes. It's a great montage. And
there
then
you go.
Stop there.
There you go. I second that. I second that opinion. Well, cool.
Fast forward the car scene.
Ben and Jacob like but do not recommend the first 5 minutes of this movie. Yeah. So next is recommendations. Ben, do you got anything to recommend to the people?
I do. So this isn't actually something that is super new. This is someone I've been following for a while.
Okay.
So about a year ago, I was getting really into like ambience videos, like, ooh, cyberpunk ambience this, you know, so-and-so ambience that. And I still love ambiences and whatnot. And I follow all the channels and whatnot, but you know, through recommendations every now and then, like a little underrated channel for a new subject. Like usually how YouTube works is like, if you get into something really new, really recently, like you look up nothing but ambience stuff, it'll give you like the most viewed ones. And then it'll give you like one underrated channel in the corner. And if you keep clicking on the mainstream ones, that's all you'll get. But sometimes you'll get those little hidden gems thrown your way, like, oh, he's into something new. Let's give them low view and high view of this subject. And then if he only focuses on high view, then you'll forget the little guys. And I was recommended a channel called Ambience of Cinema, and this guy perfectly cuts together and extracts ambience and music from movies and cuts them into like 1 hour calming mixes, and
that's
really good. And I, you know, left a comment and a like, you know, on each one of his videos, and he started to like heart them and be like, hey, this guy's a consistent fan. And I kept like friendly stalking his videos. and then I encouraged him to get a Patreon, and he did.
Oh, that's
and I started
awesome
messaging him, and I was like, hey dude, I really love your videos. Can I donate, you know, $1 to you each month? And he's like, yeah, yes, thank you. He's from Brazil. He's a Brazilian guy.
That's super
and
cool.
He makes these in his spare time. And then YouTube nuked his channel.
Oh no.
But then he popped back up again with a different name, and he kept making the same stuff. And then he disappeared again and popped back up with a different name. So he is now called Mr. Ambience.
Okay.
And I highly recommend all of his stuff. If you see the Ambience of Invader Zim on his channel, that was a specific recommend from me.
That's
same
awesome
with Gravity Falls.
That's super cool.
as well as Monk. So I really love like hidden gem creators and getting like a personal relationship with them.
Yeah.
And I remember he gave me a nice compliment that's technically me complimenting him, is where he said in the messages on Patreon, he's like, "You were one of my first supporters and I'm never going to forget how nice you were to me in the early days."
That's awesome.
And I'm like, oh, well, it's happy. I'm happy to help out a small content creator. You do a good job. I love your stuff. So go check out Mr. Ambience. He does great ambient mixes of movies and you should definitely fall asleep to his work.
That's so cool. I had no idea about any of that, Ben.
Yeah.
That's super cool.
It's fun to watch. I really love zooming in on small creators and helping them out.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Thank
well,
you.
Well, yeah. This weekend, I watched a couple movies with my family because one thing about like me and my dad and my brother is like we have like two main things that all three of us connect on, which is like video games and movies. And so after we finished doing the flooring on Saturday, we didn't finish the whole thing, but after we got done for the day, we did a double feature that night. We watched the movie Nobody, which came out this last year, and we watched John Carpenter's The Thing from 1982. And I would highly recommend both of these movies. So
I have yet to see that second one.
Yes. So Nobody is an action movie that came out this last year. I think it's currently in the theaters if you want to see it in theaters, and it's also available video on demand. Like we watched it kind of like Amazon Prime will do that thing where it's like instead of, you know, how like a Prime rental is usually $3 or whatever, if it's still in the theaters, you can now do it for like $20. So it's like kind of like paying for two movie tickets to see it.
It's an Odysseus prequel.
Yeah. No. but it's an
action. I hope someone gets the Greek mythology reference.
I get it. I'm just not going to ignore. I'm just kidding. It's a action movie. It's a revenge movie starring Bob Odenkirk, which many people will know as Saul from Better Call Saul and from Breaking Bad. But it's basically on a base level, it's very much like John Wick, where it's the idea of like ex hitman or ex like super feared person gets messed with by the wrong people and then goes on a revenge spree. Like that's like the general gist, but the minute details are different. The filmmaking style is different. The action is different. And Bob Odenkirk plays this part perfectly. The character,
really?
The idea of the character is he's an ex auditor for the U.S. government, and auditor me being basically if a rogue agent from like the CIA or FBI or like an agent does something that they're not supposed to and needs to be dealt with, he's the assassin that's sent to kill him. And he's meant to make sure that there's no inconsistencies. There's no leaks. He's an auditor, but he's an ex. He got out of it. He started a family. He became a stay at home dad. He became a working father with two kids and a wife. And he plays this character of he is trying to be satisfied with this kind of boring life. He's trying to make something out of it. Like he's currently trying to better himself and trying to like make this life interesting and make life good for his kids and stuff. Even though a part of the dynamic that's interesting is that his wife is actually more successful than he is. She's a realtor. She's a very popular realtor. She's kind of the one kind of bringing in the bank while he's an actual. Now he's a real auditor now, as opposed to an assassin auditor. But, you know, he doesn't make a ton of money. He just does the finances for his wife's brother's company. That's like a metalworking company anyway. And so he's like trying to. But then basically his house gets broken into and. From everyone's perspective, he was a wimp and let them go. Like essentially he gets broken into. He looks like he's in a perfectly easy position to like deal with these two people that broke into their house and like call the cops and then everything like he's the one who stops them basically, but then the cops come in and arrest him, but he lets them go. And both the wife and the kids and the neighbors and everybody is kind of like, dude, like they're almost like pitying him, where it's kind of like, you know, like, ah, man, if I was there, I would have killed those guys, or like I would have totally beat him up or whatever. I won't go too farther into the plot than this because I want people. It's a great movie. I want people who want to watch it to watch it. But then you basically
music begins.
You basically learn that he totally actually could have dealt with it, but he made the right decision because of X and Y. Like he analyzed the situation and realized that letting them go was going to cause way less damage to everybody. But either way, it still kind of puts him in a mood where he realizes he misses his old life a little bit. And so he lets off some steam by just annihilating this group of guys that's harassing this girl on the bus that he takes to work every day. He just takes them all out. Like
this is the plot of Shrek Forever After.
Imagine Shrek Forever After, but R-rated for violence and language, and that's what this movie is. But similar to John Wick, where then he beats up these guys, and then one of those guys happens to be connected with a crime lord, and then boom, now he's back in the thick of it, where it's like, you know, he pissed off the wrong person, and now it's, you know, it's action movie, revenge movie stuff.
I wonder how you even become like a CIA assassin. Like, what do you do to get that job? How do you get a hold of a legal sniper and do you go up with a resume? Like, look at all these guys with holes in their heads. This is my portfolio. Do you like it? How do you do this legally?
No. Yeah, I don't know, man. ask the CIA. But either way,
well, I will. But then I think they'd have to kill me.
That's true. But either way, that's the setup for the movie. It's a if you enjoy. Enjoy revenge movies or action movies, like if you're into like Taken or Bourne or John Wick or any of those movies, it's like a great genre movie. If you're not into those movies, then it's not really for you. Like, that's fine. I just think as a surprisingly competent, like just very enjoyable, fun action genre movie, it did not disappoint. And then as far as The Thing goes, it's, I mean, what's not to say? Like, everything about this movie to be said has already been said, but it's very suspenseful, very well done. The practical effects are super good. The ending is phenomenal. I won't spoil it for anyone who hasn't seen it, because the fact that it wasn't spoiled for me, like, made me enjoy it a lot better. Like, I didn't know how it ended. So the fact that it ended and I was like, whoa, that's cool. Like, it's a classic horror movie. It's really good.
I know the general gist of The Thing. It's like a bunch of scientists in the Arctic are doing sciencey things, and then an alien crashes down, and the alien's ability is to shapeshift or to get into another person's body and like infect them basically with itself.
Yes.
And it's sort of like it's basically Among Us.
It is. Like, Among Us is based on that concept. Yeah.
Yep. And then, like, I know that there's some twist or some, like, oh, that's cool at the end, but I don't know what it is. All I know is that, like, the first thing to get infected is a dog, and that's how they, like, figure it out.
Yep.
And one of the ways they, like, test it is to test, like, each person's blood. So they have, like, a little petri dish, and they're like, okay, whose blood is going to react? Mm-hmm. You know, but aside from that, and also there's this one very specific bit where, like, some guy's head falls off, and then the head becomes a crab, and then it crawls away.
Yep.
And that's literally, like, all I know about the movie.
Yeah, those are all very memorable parts of the movie. But yeah, it's really, really well done. Kurt Russell plays Kurt Russell in everything, and I love it. And he's the main character. It was one of those things where I was watching it and I was like, dang, I can totally see why one of George Lucas's original picks before he ended up going with Harrison Ford for Han Solo was Kurt Russell. Like, Kurt Russell could have played that role very well as well. The Thing is very good. You should watch it. It holds up surprisingly well for 1982. That's basically my last thing for that.
Awesome. Yeah. So, Kurt Russell, I recently watched Guardians of the Galaxy 2 again, Volume 2. And I just realized, I saw this video after I looked up some video essays about Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
Okay.
And one of the recommended videos was, could all of the MCU villains teamed up defeat Thanos? And I was like, that's interesting. Wait a minute. Hold on. Thanos technically should be considered less powerful than Ego. Ego is basically a god who's a living planet.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, can you imagine how funny that would have been in Infinity War? I was just imagining this funny scenario where, like, Quill is like, oh, yeah, you big purple grape? Well, I just took down Ego. And then, like, Thanos just stumbles backwards and he's like what
wait,
the fuck?
That guy, you got,
what did you do?
You took him out?
you took out Ego, and then, like, Thanos just spends the rest of the movie, like, just running away from the Avengers with his space stone because he's so afraid of Quill, who took down Ego, the living planet.
That kind of makes sense. Yeah. It would be interesting. I think Thanos plus Infinity Gauntlet is the most powerful MCU villain. Like, obviously, like, it requires one with the other. But Thanos sans finish, you know, without the Infinity Gauntlet, definitely, I think Ego is a bigger threat. That's really funny.
Also, for some reason, I was under the impression. Thank you. I was also under the impression that the planet that they went to that Thanos used to live on was Titan, like Jupiter's moon.
No, it's a whole other thing.
Yeah, even though that doesn't make any sense, like, because he's the, because I mean, his species were called the Titans.
Yeah.
But, like, I was like, why did I think it was Jupiter's moon? That doesn't make any sense. We know that Jupiter's moon doesn't have any big structures like that on it.
That's true. Although it is like funny that the planet is just named Titan, even though we already have a thing named Titan in our solar system. Like, that is just a weird naming thing. But either way.
Well, yeah, there you go. Well, okay. Cool.
What do you got for me next week, Ben?
I have a sign for you. So this, I love the first season of this show. It's an animated anthology series on Netflix, so you don't have to get Netflix. You already have it.
Yes.
It's called Love, Death, and Robots. And indeed. This actually started a little interesting backstory about this show. In the 80s, there was a sci-fi anthology show called Heavy Metal that was basically Love, Death, and Robots, but, you know, it was animated and, well, I mean, it is animated now in the 80s. And the way this concept started was that people were like, hey, let's reboot that Heavy Metal idea, an animated anthology show with sci-fi stuff and whatnot, but for adults. And that's how this project came to be about. And about its second, like, season, quote unquote, it's just more anthology episodes, dropped. And I really liked the first season. There were some episodes that weren't amazing.
Some were better than others. I watched the first season as well. Yep.
Yeah, I think that some of them were better than others. My favorite was definitely either Zima Blue or what was that one? I can't remember. But anyway,
I don't really remember any of the names. Season. I just remember some of the concepts.
Yeah. The Spider Lady was cool.
Yes.
But so the second season of Love, Death, and Robots is definitely something I think we should both watch.
Sweet.
And talk about when we come back.
I think that sounds great. I'm excited.
Yeah, me too.
Sweet.
All right. Well, this is Ben Film School.
You're Ben.
I'm Ben, and remember, I'm Jacob, remember?
No, yes, you're right. No, I'm Jacob,
and we both love movies.
There you go. See you guys, and maybe we'll remember our names next week.